This episode is brought to you by the Grace Enough podcast, where host Amber Cullum and her guests delve into hard truths and the unwavering grace of God while journeying in the kingdom of God here on earth. Listen every week at graceenoughpodcast.com or on your favorite listening app.
Welcome to the Table Podcast, where we discuss issues of God and culture. Brought to you by Dallas Theological Seminary.
Welcome to the Table, where we discuss issues of God and culture. I'm Daryl Bach, Executive Director of Cultural Engagement for the Hendrick Center at Dallas Theological Seminary. And our topic today are ministers in transition. And you can look at the color of the hair of the three people around the table, and you can know immediately what kind of transition we're talking about. We're going to talk about the discussion of moving out of a senior pastor's role into other forms of ministry as ministry changes, as a minister moves towards the end of their career. And I have two wonderful guests to discuss this with. Ken Horton, who has been ministered in Fort Worth, right, for a long time. How long were you in Fort Worth?
27 years at the church.
27 years at the church. And Hal Habecker, I keep wanting to put that L in there, Habecker, who has been in the Dallas, you ministered in the Dallas area, right?
Yes,
For a long time. And so they each lead their own ministries, and I'm going to let them tell you their story. So Ken, we'll lead off with you. Tell us first the ministry that you had, and then I'm going to ask you both this. When did you graduate from seminary, so people can sort of put a date on the length of your career? And then what are you doing these days?
I graduated in 1981.
Okay.
Met my wife in a ministry in North Carolina. Came back to Texas in 1984 and was at McKinney Memorial Bible Church for 27 years. Part of that time as the associate pastor, and then for 23 years as a senior pastor. And we had an intentional transition. Worked with the elders for about 8 years on that transition, and finished that ministry in 2011. And my brother and I began a ministry called Ministry Catalyst, and we focus on launching multipliers personally, in church context, and with strategic partners all around the world.
Oh, that sounds great. I've got all kinds of personal questions I want to ask you, but I will refrain from doing it now. Hal, what about your experience? When did you graduate from seminary?
I finished here in 1978.
Okay.
Met and married my wife here in the middle of my third year.
Okay.
Spent 5 years on staff at First Baptist.
Uh-huh. You had time to pursue a relationship while you were in seminary?
I did.
What was wrong with us?
I got married in the middle of Hebrew.
Got married in the middle of Hebrew?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
I taught a group of physicians and dentists at First Baptist Church for a long time.
Oh, wow.
And then I joined up with an organization called the Christian Medical Society.
Oh, sure.
Hadden Robinson was the head of it here.
Okay. Well, were you there when Ed Bloom was?
I was.
Okay. All right.
I was.
Good.
Yeah, I worked under Ed. Okay. I was a field director, a national staff director, and then I became general director.
Okay.
And for the last 22 years, almost, 21 and a half, I was the pastor at Dallas Bible Church out in North Dallas. And then I just left a year ago, this week, actually. And we've launched a ministry called Finishing Well Ministries. It's focused on older people, an older generation, number one, staying on the cutting edge of their spiritual life. You know, we don't check out as disciples growing in grace. And staying on the cutting edge of the local church. The local church is focused intensely on younger generations, and older people seem to have been forgotten in many ways. So I'm just focused on older people. What's God's purpose for you? What's His mission for you? And step up and let's do it.
Oh, wow. That's great. Well, let's dive in here. Let's talk about moving towards transition, which kind of be phase one. So you're in ministry. You've been there in many cases for several years, more than a decade in one place, that kind of thing. And it begins to dawn on you that maybe you're not here forever. Explain that thought process, because I have in mind here for this podcast, not just the people who've already made that decision, but people who may be wrestling with making that kind of a decision. Ken, what did you go through in thinking through the transition? You said it took 8 years, so obviously you spent some time thinking about it.
I would say that if you stay in a church 20, 30 years, mm-hmm. you will have gone through two or three major transitions before you leave the church.
Okay.
So that every 8 to 10 years, there is a sense in which the ministry has to be refocused, mm-hmm. redirected, perhaps shaped in a way that allows the ministry and the pastor to make the most of the next season.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly see that in the years that I had at McKinney. We had building programs and relocations, but also changes in our focus and our approach to ministry that helped make those seasons fresh starts.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I knew I didn't want to be a pastor into my 70s, mm-hmm. so I went to the elders and told them that we could do a regular transition, a traditional mm-hmm. transition. I'd finish, and when I was through, they could find somebody, or we could do an intentional transition. They chose the intentional transition, and we spent 4 years considering different people that might be a possible candidate to be the pastor. We found a fella mm-hmm. who over time proved himself to be that person, and so I left right before I turned 60 with the excitement of starting a new ministry, hopefully for the next season of ministry.
So by intentional transition, you mean you worked a transition which there was a clean handoff from you to the person coming after you.
I finished on a Sunday, and he started on a Monday.
Oh, wow.
And we worked with that through that process with the elders, and it was, I think, as positive an experience as we could have had.
And did you have him come and minister in your midst while you were still there, or was the transition a clean switch?
He actually joined our staff mm-hmm. as a singles pastor
mm-hmm.
and proved himself in that role, mm-hmm. or young adults pastor, mm-hmm. actually. And as he demonstrated his skills at that point, about a year and a half before I left, the elders came to the conclusion he had the kind of qualities they were looking for, and they approached him about that. And then we spent about a year and a half after it was announced to the people, or about a year after it was announced to the people that he would be the next pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a very very strong sense of him, we're running the race,
uh-huh.
I'm leading the race,
uh-huh.
he's running with me, and so... Mm-hmm.
And you're out of the corner, and the baton's about to go.
And then I got out of the way.
Yeah,
got off the track.
And you did, and I take it you left the church after leaving, or
I was convinced that uh-huh. the best way for me to bless him was to be involved in another church,
mm-hmm.
so that people would not be looking to see my facial expression every time something changed.
Yeah.
And that's made it very easy for me to focus on a new ministry.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I've had people say, you just seem to be so happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, if that's the biggest concern you got, that I'm so happy in this new ministry, then that's an easy problem for us to work through.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, well, that's interesting. The intentionality of that is interesting. Because that's actually probably its own podcast, the decision about how you actually make the transition and the options that a church has in facing that. Hal, what about your situation?
Well, my situation is a little bit different, but somewhat similar. You know, I was there for 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
I felt, as maybe an athletic coach might be in some ways, uh-huh. I took the church as far as I could in uh-huh. one sense.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little bit sensitive to my age as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, in communicating to a younger generation.
Right.
Now, I communicate well to my kids, grandkids and all those things, but, you know, just the mindset of a boomer
right
in the middle of the aging process is a whole lot different than a millennial or
right.
the Gen X. And I found myself feeling the distance between those two.
They didn't get any of your illustrations. They were all too old, huh?
That's true. You know,
those
kinds of things began to turn in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt, really, I had taken the church. I had done my best there.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt my season was finished there as mm-hmm. I processed it with the Lord and with my wife and elders. And so we started the intentional move. You know, we mm-hmm. talked to the elders probably 4 or 5 years ahead of time
mm-hmm.
and said, you know, by the time I'm 65,
mm-hmm.
you know, not that I picked that age as a retirement age,
right?
Because I didn't retire, but,
yeah.
you know, I picked that age as a good year to make a transition.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we worked for.
Mm-hmm.
And I transitioned out of the church a year ago, this week, actually.
And how did you work the follow-up? Because was it like the way McKinney did it, or was it a different?
It's a little bit different.
Okay.
The elders exempted me from the whole process.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have any say in the search for a new pastor. They selected a firm to help do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved out of the church for 4 or 5 months. Hmm. They wanted me to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And not be involved.
So they were in a transition in which they were doing pulpit supply.
Yes.
Until they made their selection.
And they made their selection just 2 months afterwards. Mm-hmm. And he was able to start 2 months afterwards. So 4 months after I left, the Aaron Armstrong, he started. Mm-hmm. And he's doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm somewhat back in the church, mm-hmm. But I'm preaching other places. So
you're in and out.
You know, I'm in and out.
Yeah.
Our friends are still there, so mm-hmm. I want to be supportive and want to be involved. So I haven't taken the track to disappear, but I want to be very supportive and encourage everybody there as well.
Yeah, this is great because
and if we want to see somebody, we just go to Costco's on Sunday.
We went to where you used to go, right? Yeah. You know, the beauty of this is of course, you know, we didn't talk about your stories ahead of time, and so I'm hearing this for the first time, and what we're seeing is really the reality that there are a variety of ways to make the transition. And with probably strengths and weaknesses coming with each of those approaches, and sorting that out is part of the detail here. Yeah, we're not thinking about a blueprint saying this is one size fits all here, but thinking about the principles that are involved. So, and listening to you, I'm hearing two things. On the one hand, in both cases, it sounds like there came a time when you realized that you, in terms of being able to minister to the church in terms of where it needed to go, given the nature of its makeup and to some degree its demographics, you realized the church could probably be more effective with having a younger leader. And then the second thing that I'm hearing is thinking through what's the best way to do that without being too disruptive to the local community that I'm a part of. Am I missing anything in that, or are there?
And I'm sure some of what Hal was experiencing is true for any man in his 50s,
right?
Moving towards 60. My main focus was I knew I had another type of ministry that I wanted to be involved in
that
included more travel.
So there was something pulling
you. More missions.
Yeah.
I'd been the chaplain of the TCU football team for a long time, so there was a sense of connection with younger adults that I enjoyed. But I wanted to have a different focus and a different level of relentlessness that the local church brings to you. So more flexibility, but still,
that's where I was going
but
next.
Still maximum focus on what you felt like was most important in your ministry.
That's interesting. The thought that in the transition of the ministry actually comes a different package in which you have, I use the word flexibility. I was actually going to ask you about that directly. There's this flexibility, this additional flexibility that you can have that allows you to be, in one sense, I don't mean to be pejorative here, but as you slow down, you get more nimble, you know, because you don't have the constraints of just the institutional demands that a local church puts on a pastor, some of which are probably nice to have behind you. So
I don't know about Ken, but I love that.
Yeah,
I mean
yeah.
it's really freeing.
Yeah, and you end up and both of you have ministries, I take it, that are focused pretty much in the age group in which you're functioning as well, or is yours crash?
Mine covers guys in their 20s to guys in their 60s.
Oh, really? So it's just open-ended open-ended discipleship.
Disciple faithful people.
Okay.
And there's some young ones and some old ones.
Oh, that's great. Okay. And, so now the next obvious question is, transitions can be scary, okay, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you dream and you hope that it's going to go in this direction, but when you're actually in the midst of doing it, who knows? Well, the Lord knows, but sometimes he isn't telling. What's that part of the experience like?
I think the transition is built on the ministry,
mm-hmm.
and so the degree of confidence and communication and integrity that you've experienced in that ministry is really the basis for being able to have those kind of conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that. It's important to really make sure you understand mm-hmm. what both parties are thinking through in terms of timing.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good experience. The elders were very gracious to to help us get started in our new ministry. Mm-hmm. And so that was a very positive thing. But it is, I think you need to work on communication, mm-hmm. and make sure you understand what that's going to look like, and not assume that you know what's being talked about. Mm-hmm. Just about practical things regarding, is it going to be best for me to stay or to go to another place? What does that look like? We were in agreement on that, but mm-hmm. if you weren't in agreement on that would be an important thing to
sort
to
out.
Be clear about.
Yeah.
So, and I think the guys that I've noticed that have a great experience are ones who are excited about something in the future.
Mm-hmm.
When they're living with their eyes in the rearview mirror about what used to be for uh-huh. them or for their wife in particular, mm-hmm. that can be a very difficult experience.
Oh, that's an interesting observation. I might come back to that. That's an interesting observation.
If I could hitchhike onto that briefly, I think it's important, a transition or a retirement. It's not retirement. It's a transition from something to something.
Yeah.
And it's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And it's really helped me in my ministry, because I'm working with a lot of retired people mm-hmm. who then have to figure out what are they doing for their next season of
life.
That's
right.
But their life situation is no different than mine. I mean, mm-hmm. I think God wants us to make a transition from working full-time to continuing to work for the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not retiring. You're not stopping. You're mm-hmm. not slowing down in that sense. Mm-hmm. But you live with a sense of mission that's just as relevant as when you did before. So I find myself in that same transition mm-hmm. to a new ministry. Mm-hmm. So I'm experiencing what I'm talking to other people about.
Now, reassignment, not retirement.
Okay, now here's the interesting thing. This is the question that's floating in my head, there's a part of my personality that has a pushback element in it, or thinks, okay, what am I hearing? This sounds wonderful, but so this question is kind of coming out of that package, and that is, you guys are obviously talented. You've had long experience ministries. You had a place that you were planning to go to and leaving, that kind of thing. But I imagine there are some people who transition out of ministry for whom they don't necessarily consciously know what the next step is. And I suspect you know people who have found themselves in that situation as well.
Yes.
What does that look like? Because you guys had places to go and land. In some cases, of course, the nice thing about both your situations, you got to talk through your transition as well. In some cases, people who transition out of ministry late in life don't have that privilege, if I can say it that way. That's the nice way to say it. And so, you know, a minister who's given years to a particular community all of a sudden finds himself out on the street. What kinds of thoughts do you bring to that scenario in terms of how to think about transition?
You know, Peter Drucker says he's not a pastor consultant as such, but he has a lot of wise things. He said you need to start thinking in your 40s about what you're going to do the rest of your life. And if you don't have a plan by the time you're 50s, most people who don't have a plan don't transition well to retirement.
Interesting.
So I'm thinking, you know, all along, you know, what's God doing in your life? How do you process life? What do you see yourself doing in 5 years, 10 years? So somewhere in your 50s, you mm-hmm. really need to be thinking about this. So my encouragement to any pastor would be, or any church leader in any capacity, you know, what is God taking you towards as you age?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a critical issue. And if you don't do that, I would think a pastor maybe no different than anybody else who doesn't ask those questions for himself or herself.
And I think you do have to anticipate the transition. Mm-hmm. And the transition could be from senior pastor to pastoral care pastor. There are lots of other possible
exactly right.
transitions.
Yep.
There are some pastors who don't need any compensation. I was not one of those. Mm-hmm. I knew that my transition was going to involve in a organization that was able to provide a measure of compensation for what I was giving my time to.
Mm-hmm.
And so that took time to prepare that and to set that whole process up. But I think you need to count the costs. There are some financial costs,
mm-hmm.
and depending on how well you've been able to prepare for that, that's something
that
impacts yeah. how you're able to move forward. And there's relational cost.
Mm-hmm.
Both of our wives worked through the issue of not being able to be around people that they'd given 25 plus years to. And my wife struggled with it for a while, but she loves one-on-one discipleship. Mm-hmm. And when she began to pour her life into 4 to 6 women every week, and the men take about an hour and 15 minutes to work through our conversation. They take about 3 hours to work through their conversation.
Okay, I'm not going there, but go ahead.
So they just enjoy it more than we do. Uh-huh. So I think that really cushioned the relational
side
part
of
that.
Yeah.
And then she began to find herself talking to pastors' wives that were working through whatever issue. So she has a very full ministry experience. And we now have some grandchildren, so that makes it all wonderful.
That's a gap filler.
The other thing I'd add to that, you know, I had to ask myself the question, you know, starting, leaving the position, raising support, am I willing to live by faith like I've preached everybody else to live by faith for the last 40 years? You know, will I trust God to provide for us?
Right.
And develop a new ministry and support and friends and all of those kinds of things. And you know, God is very faithful, as we all discover, but there's a step of faith that every one of us has to take.
A natural question, and don't ask you to disclose anything, you know, that's too personal, but were there pension elements to where you found yourself, or were you completely on your own in terms of the amount of service you'd given to the church?
For me, I'm mostly on my own.
Wow.
The church was very generous to put me in a status so that they continued to pay my insurance, medical insurance, and our agreement was they would do that until I turned 65. When I get on Medicare, they're no longer responsible for that. And then they've made a meaningful contribution to my ministry organization
to get you
year.
Help you to help to, you to, keep you going.
Yes, that's right.
Keep you
they've
going.
Been very, very generous in that regard. To seed money on a yearly basis, and that will change when I turn 65.
So it's interesting. So that neither of you really have walked out of this with a pension arrangement. The ministry that you're moving into is really the core means of your income.
Yes,
it is for me.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, we're.
But I would say.
Go ahead.
I would just say this. I would imagine you've experienced this too. When you've poured your life into people for 25 years and you're doing something that they can see the fruit in that ministry, that has not been a onerous experience.
Yeah.
It's
a rewarding experience to see how God works to provide for us.
So in other words, you've gotten, I think I'm reading between the lines, right? You've got people who have helped you with the transition, who you've built into their lives, and they're continuing their support with you in this new endeavor.
Absolutely.
And are walking through it with you.
And we've had some surprises.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people we thought were going to be with us.
Yeah.
And then people we hardly knew were really with us.
Wow. Yeah. Some transitions are smooth. And some transitions are actually quite rocky. And although your stories are positive ones where the transitions have gone well, we're all aware of transitions that aren't so neat and clean. What advice do you have for people who have kind of crashed to the ground as opposed to have had a smooth landing?
I would just say that there's no transition that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody in a transition has caught a elbow that they weren't expecting to catch on the way out, even the most positive one. So, but in one where there's been real hurt and real woundedness, to stop and to face that directly is going to be a critical part of a transition. Because as long as you're looking back, sort of sorting through the anger of the wounds that you've experienced, you're going to be neutralized for anything that's going to be fruitful and joyful in the future.
Mm.
So, think for that person to say, this is an important issue for you to work through. You're angry. You don't feel like you were treated well. You don't feel like you were appreciated the way you should have been. And so this is an important first step for being able to enjoy whatever future God has for you. So you can't carry that with you and expect to have a fruitful final season of ministry.
This episode is brought to you by the Grace Enough Podcast. I am its host, Amber Cullum. Each week, I sit down with a guest to discuss hard truths and the unwavering grace of God they've experienced while journeying in God's kingdom here on earth. You'll hear from guests like Jen Wilkin, Jamie Ivey, Andy Crouch, and Scott McKnight. Listen to these conversations and more by searching Grace Enough Podcast on your favorite listening app or by visiting graceenoughpodcast.com.
Hal?
Couple things come to my mind. First of all, the scriptures are filled with transitions. Mm-hmm. Of all kinds. Mm-hmm. So if people don't think about transitions, in one sense, you're not paying attention to the scriptures. Everything is a, life itself is a whole transition process over mm-hmm. decades. And I think that goes back to our relationship with Jesus. I think it's the most critical thing. People who don't land well or become bitter, disappointed, you know, it's hard to process all that with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And if he's in it and ahead of it as he orchestrates life, mm-hmm. you know, we all believe in a sovereign God except mm-hmm. when it hurts, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's terribly important to process life at a deep level with Jesus all the time, because if you don't, you get hung up. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to have good friendships. Mm-hmm. You know, Vicki and I had a strong core of 5-6 close couples who walked through this entire process with us. Mm-hmm. And they held our arms up like Aaron and Hur held mm-hmm. Moses up in the battle. And then the other thing, you need to converse well with your elder board. You know, and that's when a lot of hurts happen. If the mm-hmm. leadership teams are not on the same wavelength, mm-hmm. but you have to keep working at that. That's an annual, almost a weekly, daily process in the life of a pastor. How are you working through all these things? And if you get hung up at some point, you know, the plane may crash and burn, and then you just start, you need friends, you need Jesus, you need time away, you need to get refocused and press on.
Yeah, because it seems to me that they're in the transition out, if it's an uneven one, you can stay in the hurt. You can, you know, some people just they crash and burn because they burned out. I mean, they just haven't managed their experience well, or circumstances have gotten beyond them. So that's an option. But it also strikes me on the other side that when I think about ministry, we live in Dallas-Fort Worth where there's a lot going on. There's all kinds of opportunities for terrific ministry. If you didn't have somewhere to land, it isn't because there aren't opportunities to minister. There are all kinds of possibilities. And it seems to me that thinking through different kinds of ministries that might need good volunteer experienced help might actually be a way to help transition into a type of recovery by becoming useful again in ministry, if you're willing to undertake that and look at that. I mean, is that another way to think about completing a rough transition?
As long as you're focused on yourself, you're going to be stuck. Mm-hmm. And as a person begins to give their lives to other people and use the gifts God's given them, they hopefully will have a little more perspective to address whatever they've already experienced, and they begin to experience the blessing and the joy that God created us for. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that I've discovered about going through hurtful times is that when you learn how to do that, when that becomes something that has a healthy outcome, mm-hmm. you're prepared for ministering to a whole host of people, because everybody you know has been hurt. Mm-hmm. And the human response to hurt is anger. And so there's nobody in your
sheep
circle.
Sheep are dirty.
Yeah, and so nobody that we know doesn't need encouragement as they work through life's hurts.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah. One of the things we've done, and I don't know what you did in Fort Worth, we had a band of brothers, so to speak, of about 12 to 15 local pastors who just met regularly to process what's life in the church like and how to encourage each other, because everybody goes through challenging times. And that was incredibly valuable. I mean, we're not lone rangers. Mm-hmm. You know, we need friends around us.
Right.
And we need to be processing. On this issue, I think the more proactive you can be, I mean, even I'm thinking about mm-hmm. you and what you would do after, and moving into this role mm-hmm. here. I mean, I'm sure you thought a long time about that.
Yeah, I do, but Mark doesn't want me to think about it too much.
No, I just think you need to be creative and ask your friends, what has God gifted me to do? If you're struggling, where do I go? If you don't have a sense of transitioning to something, well, that's okay. Let's pray. Let's trust God. Let's lean into Him and lean into friends and do the kinds of things through which God will open doors.
Yeah.
If you allow your identity to be so closely linked with being the pastor of a certain church, you will increase the trauma of that transition.
That's
and
really
so
true.
I was very intentional about having an identity. I enjoyed being the pastor at McKinney Church, but that was not my identity. And that's something that you choose to think about and address years before you actually are no longer the pastor of Dallas Bible Church.
Well, I think it's the essence of the spiritual life. We are in Christ. We are not, our identity is not what we do. It's not in our skill set. It's not in our giftedness. It's not in who we're married to. It's not who our kids are. It's not who our grandkids are. It's not where we live. It's not our resources. Our identity is in Jesus. And that's where you see all the transitions.
Your citizenship is a heavenly citizenship. You're described in this life as being in exile, which kind of implies that you're moving from place to place. It's your picture of transitions, et cetera. Sure, all of that is in play. Obviously, the hard part of this is that because we're so located beings and we often are culturally influenced, sometimes our identity gets misdirected in terms of where we find ourselves and we wrap ourselves up. I'm sitting here thinking, and this risks dating the podcast a little bit, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. I'm thinking about, and you don't think of a spiritual example coming from this place necessarily, but I'm thinking of Ronda Rousey, who just got, beat. In a famous match, and she did an interview yesterday in which she describes being in the locker room after she lost, having suicidal thoughts, because she says, if people don't care about me because I'm no longer the champion, who am I?
Yeah.
And it's this is what you're talking about, the identity placed in the wrong place, and so she was immediately dislocated by the loss. And the pain was so deep. And then she immediately transitioned, strangely enough, to what her future was going to be. And in thinking about her future, she transitioned out of the very scary place she was finding herself kind of unexpectedly having landed in. And I think that's actually a very normal set of emotions in some ways if you get dislocated. To end up in that kind of uncomfortable space.
And some of the men I'm discipling are men who have, in their late 50s, early 60s, left prominent positions in a business or as a medical doctor, and they go through the same issues.
Yes, they do.
I'm no longer practicing medicine. Who am I? And if they're followers of Christ, one of the things we've discovered when they begin to focus on discipling three or four guys a week, they discover I think a more biblical understanding of their real identity that has a lasting opportunity in a way that being a vice president at Lockheed Martin isn't going to provide.
Because ministry and mission never stop. And so, it doesn't matter where you are, whether you're in the church or you're in a business or whatever, ministry and mission, at least theoretically, should never stop. And so it is a transition, but it's not a retirement. And I think there's value in thinking through and then responding to the way God has built us to serve
until
He calls us home. So, that's interesting. We could stay here, but I do have one other topic I do want to transition to, and that is, all right, we've thought about the transition, we've executed the transition, and we've even figured out, okay, we're going to even have a support team as we move into the transition. What's the transition like once you finally get to where this new place is that you're going? What advice do you have for people who are headed towards or are thinking about entering into that phase of the discussion?
Well, my first thought is enjoy it. I mean, this past year for Vicki and me has been a real gift. It's the Lord's opened new doors. Vicki kiddingly says, you know, I married you for better or for worse, but not for lunch. But, you know, our whole life is different. Our marriage is different. Our schedules are different. And we have entered into those. And the only thing I'd say, and reflective, it's important for a pastor and his spouse, his wife, to really process this together, because the hurt may be different on different sides, and it's important to process this under the leadership
of the Lord. It's not just your transition, it's her transition too, very much.
And I think for her, in a sense, it's more difficult than me. I'm transitioning out of something to something else, and she goes along with it and is a very part of it. But, you know, immediately my whole mind and heart is focused on a new mission.
Right, right.
But it takes us both some time to get up to speed on that. But I have loved it. I have loved not having the normal routine at the church, where thinking about the staff, thinking about the worship order, thinking about elder meetings. And I'm focused on what it is that God has me doing, and I'm really free to do that almost 100%. I feel the creative things flowing as I haven't felt, you know, in the past, and it's just been fun.
If you keep talking, we're going to have no one in the ministry. We're not here.
I would echo that.
Yeah,
it's given me a chance to have maximum focus on a few things that I know are very fruitful and that I'm gifted to do. It gives me not only time flexibility, but spatial flexibility. I'm not very technical, but I do know how to use Skype and FaceTime. And so I can continue to do my discipleship sessions with men in Colorado in the summer. And I can be at 50 degrees and they can be at 100 degrees. And it gives me global opportunity. I've discipled guys in Japan and in India. Anybody that has internet, I can spend time with them on a regular basis. So it's just been very encouraging for me to have this kind of opportunity. And I've discovered the flexibility gives me the margin to take phone calls from pastors and to be available to people in a way that I just wasn't able to be when I was responsible for a large staff.
Now, the one dimension of this that we've alluded to a couple of times, and how you just addressed it a little bit, but I don't want to leave it behind, is what is this like for the spouse? And we really probably should go wind this clock back a little bit from the moment you start thinking about this to the point where you've come through it. What sensitivities should a person have in relationship to their spouse as they're moving in this direction and going in this direction? And what advice would you give and things to be aware of as you make that move?
Well, certainly you don't want to surprise your wife. My wife was in on all of my thinking and my wrestling through this. And she did have a major adjustment because she was very involved in children's ministry and women's ministry. But after a season, which was cushioned by the fact that in those early years, she went with me on many of my trips to Israel, to Turkey, to Czech Republic.
And so she knew where you were going.
And she was going with me and actually ministering with me. That's diminished some at this point. But I think for her, because she discovered how much joy she got in one-on-one discipleship as well, we are actually partners in ministry in a way we were never partners when I was the pastor of a church, because we're both doing similar types of things with people.
Now, are you working with couples when you do this?
No. So a lot of times she'll be working with the wife and I'll be working with the husband, but there's not a
couple part of it.
And we'll do some counseling with couples if their marriage is working through some issue. But the one-on-one process is a process focused on helping that person be prepared to disciple people who will disciple people.
Okay. And what advice do you have?
Well, I want to echo what Ken said. You know, we can't start too early. I mean, hopefully this is the way we've been doing ministry all along.
Right, right.
With our wives.
Right.
You know, we're processing what God's doing in our lives. And so whenever we sense any transitions, you know, she was the first one we talked with about this. You know, we bat this around for years. You know, what do we do next? Now, her role in our ministry now is a whole lot different than it was as a pastor's wife. I mean, and a pastor's wife, you're involved in everything together almost. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of things that I'm involved in separately from her. But for like example, last night we went out with a retired physician and his wife, and we had a wonderful evening encouraging them together. I mean, she's very much a part of my life, very much a part of our ministry. But I think that's one of the things we're just praying about and really seeking God, you know, how to really grow this ministry between the two of us together and make it stronger.
Hmm. Now, what are you still trying to figure out about the transition? Is there anything that fits into that category, or are you just pretty content with where you are, or what does that look like?
When we started, we did not envision developing a resource material that we would put online. And once mm-hmm. we did that, and now it's been translated to a half a dozen languages, mm-hmm. my board is saying, what's the next transition plan?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to take this ministry when you're no longer able to do it?
So
suddenly I am working through with my board, mm-hmm. what's it look like when I'm 70, when I'm
– Yeah.
You know, so who's going to be the person who – takes this type of ministry and helps direct it to the next level. So I would say that I have moved from transition to transition. I've transitioned out of the TCU football mm-hmm. role, did mm-hmm. that for 20 years, mm-hmm. did it with another fellow for 3 years, and now he's done it without my participation. So I'm a transition.
Now, is that why they're playing better football these days?
Well, you know, it probably has something to do with it. But we actually had a pretty good run while I was there, too.
So okay.
But no question, he's done a great job.
Yeah.
And a godly man who has a great heart for evangelism. Uh-huh. So I'm excited for him.
Yeah, that's great. So the transitions never stop is kind of what you're saying.
I think that's sort of the life lesson that I'm finally getting clarity about.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, and my transition is not like yours, although people have asked, what are you going to do 10 years from now? You know, my model for ministry, I mean, we've had models here, mm-hmm. Prof. Hendricks. I mean, you, mm-hmm. Pentecost, mm-hmm. You know, Vernon Grounds from Denver Seminary was one of my mm-hmm. encouragers. I mean, you live your whole life giving your life away.
That's right.
Now, one of the things I've really enjoyed, I don't work at the same pace mm-hmm. that I did. You know, I don't quite put in the same hours, mm-hmm. and my schedule is eased up slightly.
Mm-hmm.
But just working on personal stuff, where does the ministry transition to next?
Mm-hmm.
What are the new things we ought to be doing? And that's what a church wrestles with. How do we change? You know, you were talking about 8 to 10 year cycles in a church, you know. I think there's cycles for everything, and how do you keep growing, or how do you keep responding to the Spirit of God? So that's my big concern, and how you pay attention to how God leads.
And no matter what happens for the organization that I'm involved in, mm-hmm. as long as I'm healthy and clear-headed mm-hmm. and can make it to the coffee shop or mm-hmm. to the computer, mm-hmm. I'm going to be involved in one.
You're in business. You're in the ministry. You're
yeah,
in business.
That's right.
Yeah. So I'm going to shift the question this way. Let's assume that there's someone, probably a strange person, who's in their 40s listening to this, and they're thinking through what they're hearing. What advice would you give to younger pastors who aren't in this kind of a transition yet, and probably are still some distance from it, but it is a part of what ought to at least be a blip on the radar screen? What would you say to the pastor who's in their 40s as we kind of begin to summarize what it is we've been talking about?
Let me jump in there. Yeah. I think you pay attention. First of all, you should pay attention to the older people in your congregation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many young pastors are focused on younger churches, and older people are feeling more marginalized by the church today than ever before. And I think the best thing a young pastor can do is pay attention to older people in the church and follow what they're going through, because inevitably that's what you're going to be going through.
Mm-hmm.
You're no different than they are. You're just a few decades behind them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I spoke at Baylor University a few weeks ago with some Honors College students down there, and my advice to them when they went home for the next break, do me a favor and go pay attention to your grandparents.
Mm.
Just go sit with them, have a meal, ask them questions about their life. You know, the generations are more disparate today than perhaps ever before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the church is the great intergenerational organism that brings the body of Christ together.
Hmm.
So if they pay attention to that, they will transition a lot better, and those older people will start giving them better advice.
Hmm.
One of the best things I did when I became the pastor in McKinney, I was 36 when I became the senior pastor, and every month I met with the elders who had retired, the elder emeriti, as they call them. There were about a half a dozen of them. Mm-hmm. We'd meet for prayer and then go to lunch. And they would tell me the stories, and soon it was the same stories over and over and over again, and we would pray. And I knew they were praying for me every month. They felt included, and I learned a tremendous amount from those men. In fact, I'm going to do a funeral this weekend for a 96-year-old widow of one of those men. So I think you spend time with older people, as you mentioned. You partner with them in ministry. And then whenever we did have to make a change, when we put up the screens 25 years ago, which was a revolutionary thing to have the video screens, those older elders knew about it before anybody did, so except the other elders. So they are able to help you make the changes you need to make because they're involved with you in that process.
20 years from now, they'll have to be, the young pastors will be making the same transitions that we're making. So the more they can get a head start and at least thinking about this, the better it is.
Yeah, I really do think that the generational transition and ministering across generations, one of the greatest challenges of the church, that also is a very, very important challenge, because there are very few places today where you have the opportunity to get that kind of cross-generational input that is so helpful to balancing people out in terms of how they face life.
I have a 31-year-old and a 28-year-old daughter and son, and my relationship with them has been a huge blessing in terms of trying to relate to their peer group. And so I think that's another thing a pastor can do, not only reach older, but let your kids be a part of helping you
be a sounding board.
So it's not just your connection with the next generation. It's your connection with the generation behind you as we all go through this process.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you for coming in and helping us think through transitions, particularly transitions out of senior pastorate into the next and oftentimes final phases of ministry, and helping us kind of look ahead and look back and look around and think through what that involves. I think it's a very underappreciated part of a person's ministry career, and it's important to the stability of the organizations that you're a part of. It's important to the future of the individual ministers, and it's an important part of doing ministry well. So we thank you for being a part with us,
and
we thank you for joining the table, and we look forward to having you back again with us soon.
Thanks for listening to the Table Podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit dts.edu/thetable. Dallas Theological Seminary. Teach truth, love well.